Jump shot. It goes. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies Tuesday edition of the show with Amari Sankofa. As always, Amari joining us from The Athletic. He's actually in Dallas already on his way back. Was at San Antonio last night for the Grizzlies game. What's going on, Amari?
Man, it's going great. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. I appreciate you taking the time out. I know because you're stuck in the airport, so there's not much else to do probably. But got a lot to talk about the Grizzlies. Since we last spoke, the Grizzlies played a couple games over the weekend, played again last night in San Antonio. I want to start right off the top, though, with the Ja Morant resting. I just want to get your opinion on it. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I talked about it a little yesterday, but where did you fall on Ja Morant, Brandon Clark, and the rest at home with the Grizzlies this weekend?
I'm pretty much right in the middle of the debate. You know, I certainly think that if the coaching staff and front office receives word from their medical team, which, you know, they have, that Ja should be on the minutes restriction and shouldn't play back-to-backs right now, that they should do that. You know, Ja obviously had surgery during the offseason, and it wasn't a serious knee surgery, but I think the concern there is just that whenever you open up a knee, you know, there's just some variance that you can't account for. So they're trying to mitigate that as much as possible. And I get it, you know, and if they're concerned that his long-term health could be in danger, then they should absolutely do that. But with that said, you know, obviously they sell tickets to fans under the idea that, you know, guys will play, especially if they're healthy, and that includes Ja Morant. And if they know in advance that Ja's not going to play, which they clearly did on Saturday, given that they had two G League guys with the team that night, something needs to be done. You know, and I don't know if it could be done locally or if the NBA can take the lead on this, you know, and give fans some sort of break on this. But, you know, you have fans paying hundreds for tickets, you know, they may only be able to go to one game a year. You know, some fans that they want to see, you know, the second round pick or the second overall pick, Ja Morant, and they can't because he's a healthy scratch. You know, like if you go see a concert, you know, like for your favorite band and the lead singer has, I don't know, some sort of illness and he can't sing that night, most concert venues would refund you your ticket because even if the rest of the band could play, obviously, if the lead singer isn't there, then it's not going to be the same in what you pay for. I mean, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but it's the same thing. You know, a lot of people are paying to see Ja, he didn't play, and that sucks for fans to kind of have to deal with that. So, you know, at this point, like, it is what it is. You know, if it impacts the tennis anyway, like, I guess we'll see. But the team has a right to do it, and fans have a right to be pissed about it, I guess, long story short.
Yeah, I think that there's a, like you mentioned, that's got to be happy medium. Like, I understand what they're trying to do because I get it. I get the basketball schedule just like you do. But there's got to be a way to do it better. Like, if they had said 2 weeks ago, said, hey, on this game, Ja Morant's not going to be there. 2 weeks ago. We're going to just go, we know we're going to sit him because this is our plan. And then people are going to go, okay, well, I won't go to that game then. Like, I think that's a better reasoning than going, all right, 2 hours prior to the game, like, okay, he's just not playing. There's got to be a happy medium, and I think the Grizzlies have to be able to figure that out and see from their perspective, you know, who's supporting this team, and it's the fans, and I think they deserve a little bit more than what they did on Saturday night. Nonetheless, it's over now. Ja Morant played last night, and he has not had the past couple games, he's not been great. He has been very rookie-ish and very average, which I guess we all got spoiled. I got spoiled talking with you on the show about Ja Morant. Ja Morant's going to go through these issues. He's going to go through slumps. But Tyus Jones has looked he's been really consistent. But I guess Tyus Jones has been consistent enough to where he should be. Did you have a problem with Tyus Jones playing in the fourth quarter last night over Ja Morant? I've got like several people tweeting at me, I'm sure you did too, about Tyus playing in favor of Ja last night.
Yeah, look, you can have it both ways, right? Like when Ja's rolling in the fourth quarter and he sits for a few minutes and it comes back in, people sure. get mad because the argument is, well, Ja gives us our best chance to win, therefore he should play. Which, I mean, yeah, you want to win, so yeah, I mean, that's a fair argument. On the other end of that, Ja was not playing well last night, and Tyus Jones was a lot better, as you mentioned. And Tyus closes the quarter because Taylor Jenkins felt that, Tyus Jones, I mean, gives them their best chance to win, you know, which was accurate because Tyus Jones had a much better game, and he had some key shots down the stretch, passed the ball really well, and they ended up winning. And I saw people argue that, well, how's Ja going to learn to close games if he's on the bench because his backup's playing better? Which one is it? Do you want to win or do you want to develop Ja? Ja's got plenty of opportunities to play in fourth quarters this season. But at the same time, if you want the team to win, then, you have to give Jenkins the benefit of the doubt when Tyus Jones is having a better game. So you can't argue both. You know, if Ja's playing well enough to close a game, he'll close a game. If he's not, he won't. And I know everybody has different opinions. It's not the same people who are arguing both. But, it's definitely when you're scrolling Twitter and you see all these counter arguments, I think people just got to have to step back and realize that at the end of the day, this team isn't going to get a playoff spot anyway. So in the grand scheme, it doesn't really matter, right? Ja's struggling and he sits on the bench. Okay, he's still going to, when it's all said and done, probably average around 30 a night, which is pretty average for a starting rookie, or actually above average, I would say. So, I think, or from a night-to-night basis, it's really not worth reading into it that deeply. Ja's closed plenty of games, and he'll continue to. And if he's struggling, then, Tyus, the Grizzlies signed him to play him, and he'll play. And that's just basically what it comes down to.
It's definitely an interesting debate, right? I mean, because I think people ultimately say, we just want Ja to get the experience. But, inside of the game, and then the fourth minute, the fourth quarter, I think people still want to win the game, right? I think people still want that W, no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you should coach to win, absolutely. You don't want to coach to lose and start to develop those habits in guys. You also don't, as a head coach, you don't want to upset guys by not playing them when they're playing pretty well. You have to maintain some sort of competitive balance on the team. And, playing a guy who's obviously struggling over a guy who's playing pretty well, and they're both young guys, probably isn't good for the health of the team if it's a recurring issue. So, Taylor has to develop the young guys, but he also has to coach his team and hold guys accountable, and you can do both at the same time. It isn't just about playing Ja Morant 48 minutes a night. They have a good backup, and if Tyus is playing well, then he deserves to play.
Yeah, it's definitely a position that Taylor Jenkins has to manage quite difficult sometimes, because last night was probably the most perfect example you could get, just because it's difficult to – you can't win everything. You can't win it all. You can't – like you said, you can't have it both ways. You can't get what you want every single time, because it's just not possible. So I thought it was an interesting debate. And for one, I thought that Taylor did the right thing in the fact that you play Tyus. Tyus was good. Ja was not good last night. I mean, he came back in the fourth quarter, and he was forcing things, trying to do too much. I mean, he was putting them in a bad spot, and Tyus came in and settled them down, and he got them a W, or he helped get them a W. So, like you mentioned, at the end of the day, I think that's totally, totally correct and a great way to put it. You just got to pick what you want, whether that's winning, whether that's development. And you can't have both of them, because sometimes those two things are going to conflict a lot of times in the season. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll talk more with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment, including Audible Originals. Audible Originals are stories created exclusively for audio, including documentaries, exclusive audiobooks, and scripted shows that you can't hear anywhere else. Every month, you can choose one audiobook regardless of price, as well as two Audible Originals from a fresh selection every single month. Members stay motivated and inspired with unlimited access to exclusive guided fitness and meditation programs. Start listening with a 30-day free Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible Originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA or text
Locked On NBA to 500500. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA, or just text that code to Locked On NBA to 500500. Go to audible.com for your free trial today. Welcome back to the show, talking with Amari Sankofa of The Athletic, like we do every single Tuesday throughout the season. I want to talk a little bit about Jaren Jackson Jr. He obviously had some struggles over the week early on, but I thought he looked better the last two games. But Jaren Jackson Jr. last night was the Jaren Jackson Jr. I think that we all have come to love. What's changed for him, do you think, from the last few games to really get him going? Is it just easy shots? What have you seen just being there around him on the way game?
You know, I think sometimes you have to really, really get frustrated and mad at yourself before you fix, you know, whatever was kind of ailing you before. And I think we saw that last Wednesday with Jaren when he only played 15 minutes and went 0-for-5, picked up a couple early fouls, and he just wasn't in the game at all mentally. You know, from there, that's pretty much rock bottom for him, right? You know, you only take 5 shots, you miss all of them. Your coach sits you in the fourth quarter, and you're supposed to be the guy on this team. Since then, I mean, he's made burned half his shots. I think he went 10 for 17 last night and on Saturday, scored 23 and 24 points. You know, his shots returned. He's getting more licks inside. It's just been a 180 for him, basically. You know, and I think for him, he's been a little bit more aggressive looking for his shots, been more decisive on his drives. You know, he's still been good defensively. He's just been a lot more focused. But his teammates have also been setting him up inside more, and Taylor's been running more plays to get him looks inside more. And I think that's helped him get comfortable because, obviously, you know, he was really good in the post last season, and he wasn't doing that as much to start this year. He was more of a face-up guy. You know, I think the team needs to make him comfortable and get him going inside first so that he can have that confidence when he's driving or when he's spotting up. And I think that's what we're seeing.
It was 4 from 6 last night from 3. Just a fantastic game shooting the ball for him. I tweeted this last night, and I had some pushback, and I want to give you thoughts on it. I tweeted that for the end of the game that Jaren has to touch the ball every possession. Like, whether he shoots it or not, he's got to touch the ball every possession down the stretch. Are you in the camp that he needs to the offense at least has to get him involved in some way, or do you think they can survive on Jonas Valanciunas doing what he does and Dylan Brooks doing what he does with Jaren out there?
I lean toward agreeing with you for sure. Like, especially in the fourth quarter last night, I think he took 2 shots. You know, and he went into the quarter 9-15 from the field. You know, and then only put 2 shots in the fourth with the game on the line. That's been a recurring issue for the Grizzlies, where Jaren tends to disappear for stretches. You know, there really shouldn't be any games where he's taking 3 or 15 shots a night. I mean, I think that's the bare minimum for him because he's one of the most talented guys on the team. And, you know, like, kept touching the ball every possession, obviously, you know, isn't him shooting the ball every possession, you know, which is, you know, like, I know you're not arguing that, but maybe people are conflating the two. Even if this establishes the habit of him being more involved in the offense, I think that's a positive step forward, because this team is much better when Jaren Jackson Jr. is on, and he shouldn't be disappearing for long stretches like he had a tendency to do because teammates just aren't getting him the ball. So, you know, he touched the ball once a possession just to prove a point. I think that's a positive step for this thing.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I said, whether he shoots the ball is not the question or the debate. It is Jaren has to touch the ball because if he has the ball, he draws a lot of double teams now. He gets a lot of attention that can alleviate pressure off some other people. Let's take one more quick break. We'll come back. We'll finish up with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic. Welcome back to the show, talking with Amari Sankofa from The Athletic. If you're not already subscribed over there, make sure you go and do so. It's super cheap. It's not enough money to even worry about coming out of your bank account every single month. Trust me, I do it as well. Peter and Marty do a great job. Dylan Brooks last night, I thought, was another decent game. Where are you at on Dylan Brooks? I struggle with him, man. I see games where he goes out and scores a basketball, and you get excited, and I see other games where he has tunnel vision. It's you know, I know it's a contract year for him and all this other stuff, but where do you land on Dylan Brooks?
I still like Dylan. You know, like, I definitely agree that he has tunnel vision at times, that he tries to force the issue. You know, like, sometimes it ends with him drawing a foul, but, you know, and then a lot of times it's a turnover or just a bad shot. And I think it stands out more of him because, you know, like, he's probably the only guy on the team who really does that, who really kind of forces the issue. And I don't think it is with bad intentions, obviously, you know, because this team does have a tendency to fall into offensive reps. And, you know, he's been the best shooter on this team, and he has been one of the better offensive players, even with those bad shots. So, you know, I don't think it comes from a bad place when he does it. But we've seen him at his best, and, you know, we've seen him get the ball more when he's playing within himself. He's, you know, getting himself open from behind the arc. You know, like I think when he scored 31, a lot of those were just off the catch and shoot plays, or, you know, he catches the ball and then it's just a decisive drive and he makes something happen. He definitely needs to do that more. And, you know, I think he's capable of doing that. But overall, I think just because he's been a good shooter and because he's been a good defender, I tend to forgive those bad plays more often than not, simply because, you know, this offense isn't really or hasn't been scoring a lot anyway, you know, especially with Jaren struggles and, of course, Josh struggling in the past few games.
Where do you – is Dylan, for you, where does he long-term in the NBA? Is he role player, starter? What type of player do you think he is in this league?
I think he's like a Courtney Lee type. You know, I think he could be a starter on, you know, teams that obviously like wing depth like the Grizzlies currently do. But ideally, you would want him as more of like a 6-8 man off the bench. You know, obviously that would, you know, like lessen the need for him to take as many shots. You know, and if he's taking better shots, you know, he's taking good threes and, you know, driving when he has lanes instead of forcing the issue. He's a lot more efficient. And it would also allow him to, you know, exert more effort on the defensive end, where overall I think he's pretty good. So now I don't think he's a long-term starter, but I do think the Grizzlies should keep him, you know, certainly and ideally sign him to a pretty reasonable deal going forward, because I do think that as a backup shooting guard, he's pretty ideal for that role.
Bruno Caboclo didn't play last night. Did Taylor say there was any reason for that, or did anybody ask him?
There's no reason beyond Bruno just not being very high in the rotation right now. You know, he played when Brandon Clark was out, and there is more minutes available. But overall, you know, I think, you know, as far as the bigs on the roster, you know, Jaren, Valanciunas, Kyle, Brandon Clark, Solomon Hill are all ahead of Bruno in the rotation. And for the most part, I think they've all played better. You know, like I think the last week they have Solomon Hill hasn't been quite as strong, but he definitely had a strong preseason and strong first half of the season. And, you know, and if they're using Bruno solely as a big, then, yeah, like they are guys on the team who do big things better than, you know, I think Bruno can. Will he have, you know, opportunities later on? Like, I don't know. You know, I think he's a big for now. Like, if you switch him to the wing, maybe that helps him out a lot. They could use help on the wing, obviously. But I think it's just a matter of the fact that, you know, they have a pretty solid big rotation. And, you know, I think Bruno naturally falls toward the end of it.
I think you're probably right on that. Last couple of things before we get you out of here. Which were you more excited to see, Jaren Jackson playing 38 minutes or Brandon Clark shooting 6-7 again, going almost perfect again from the field for like one of the third straight game in the row?
I'm going to go with Jaren, you know, particularly because Jaren only had 2 fouls in the 38 minutes, which, you know, has to be a record for him. You know, like I don't mean that in a mean way, but he's just, you know, but he's been fouled for him to play 38 minutes and be fouled twice is a major step forward. You know, I think with Clark, like at this point, we know Clark's efficient. You know, we know he has great touch around the rim, a nice mid-range game. He's going to have more nights like that. And, you know, and him only playing around, you know, 18, 22 minutes a game really allows him to be effective, you know, within those stretches. So, you know, I think Clark's established that this can be – I mean, he's not going to go, you know, 7-8 most nights, but, you know, I do think that he can continue to be very efficient. But if Jaren has more games like he had last night where he's playing big minutes and not fouling, then it's really going to help his trajectory and his development this season. So I think that's – for me, at least, I mean, I think that's a little bit more impressive and important for the team.
It's close for me, man. Brandon Clark continues to impress me, like really and truthfully. Again, I think we talked about this last week. You know, he looks like a third year player. Maybe I don't know for me or you or David, but one of us was talking about it. I mean, I'm sure we all have at some point, but he just looks good. Just impresses me every single game. I'm waiting for that game where he has like a terrible game, but really hasn't come yet. And so, I mean, I'm sure it will. He's a rookie, so there will be a point where, you know, he gets there, and you know he has an advantage that he's typically usually playing over, you know, backup bigs, things like that. So he does not have to go against, you know, Carl Anthony Towns and Anthony Davis's of the world too often. So that does help, but there will be a game when it happens. And I'll be interested to see how he handles it and all that stuff. Have you had any update on Grayson Allen? Have you got a medical update yet?
Nothing yet. Obviously he, it's just the ankle for him. So, it doesn't seem like they're in a rush to bring him back. He was walking around the locker room last night. I don't know what that means for his future availability, but he's definitely making progress.
Oh, and I was going to ask you, what's your take of DeAnthony Melton? We saw him Saturday night. He got the backup minutes because Ja was out. What did you think of DeAnthony Melton?
I thought he looked good. He's 6'2" for 6'8" wingspan. I thought he looked good defensively. I thought he looked really good in transition. Obviously he's a pretty good athlete. I think he hit a three-pointer. Like, he looked good. I think the thing with DeAnthony is that they see him right now solely as a point guard, and that's obviously going to limit his minutes given that they have two point guards who, can play all 48 minutes. So I think that he's going to struggle for opportunities, as long as Tyus is on this team. If they switch him to the wing, which I think he could play, then that would, talk about him doing a little bit more, especially if he can actually shoot. But, I thought Saturday was a good debut for him. I think he certainly showed that, he can handle whatever minutes they give to him if they find more for him. And that's something to watch, because I think we all expected Anthony Melton to have a little bit more of a role than he's had so far. So, I guess that's sort of a wait and see.
Yeah, I sort of put it like this yesterday, is that he didn't look like a third string point guard. I'll put it like that. He looked like a guy out there that could be out there generally anytime. It wasn't an abject disaster, which is a lot of times what you get with third string point guards. So that's kind of how I viewed it. But again, if you haven't already subscribed to The Athletic, go and do so. Amari and Peter do a great job over there. Amari, I appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
Looking forward to it, Mark. You have a good one.